Peter B. Collins, News and Comment, Tuesday, January 10th. Where is Keith Olbermann? Keith Olbermann brings the message to millions. That's a great tune from Nils Lofgren when he was solo back in the 1970s. It's called Keith Don't Go. And Nils, last time I checked, was playing guitar in the E Street Band with Bruce Springsteen. And I tuned in to current cable TV on Monday evening, hoping to get a preview of the New Hampshire primary from Mr. Olbermann, but he wasn't there, and there was no explanation for his absence. David Schuster, an adequate substitute, but not Keith, was there. And we know that there was a dust-up that started last week around the Iowa caucuses as the owners of Current TV, Al Gore and attorney Joel Hyatt, apparently got into a dispute with Olbermann about who was going to do what. And I don't know who said what to whom and who's right and who's not, but as we prepare to watch the coverage Tuesday evening of the New Hampshire primary, I expect that Olbermann will not be there. And last week, Al Gore even came on as a talking head to offer his comments on the Iowa caucus. So I don't want to get in the middle of their battle. And Keith Olbermann is an odd guy. He's eccentric. He has some quirks, and I know stories about that that someday I might share with you. But when he is on camera and when he is on, Keith Olbermann delivers. And over the last few months, I have really felt that his coverage of the Occupy movement and related issues has been so much better than what's offered on the alleged liberal service of NBC and General Electric at MSNBC. And I've also noticed a big change. Rachel Maddow is just obsessed with coverage of the Republican primary campaign for president and is not giving us much about other issues, like the National Defense Authorization Act. She did cover it. But to me, it's such a critical issue that she should have stopped the presses on all the Newt Gingrich opposition research that we've heard for years and talk about what's critical to Americans today. So, Keith, I hope you and Al and Joel patch things up and hope to see you back on the tube very soon. Now, speaking of the New Hampshire primary, the Center for Tax Justice released a report today analyzing the tax budget proposals of the leading Republican candidates. And Rick Santorum has the tax proposals that benefit the least. Let me put it this way, benefit the ultra-rich the least, because he's only talking about devoting 38% of his tax cuts to the top 1%. Mitt Romney is at 40%. Rick Perry and Newt Gingrich are both at 47%. These are people who haven't learned diddly. And as Thomas Frank points out in his new book, Pity the Billionaire, and he'll be a guest on our show in the next few weeks, the Republicans turned around their defeat in 2008, and instead of being a kind of ordinary, recovering party out of power that lost the last election, they doubled down on the boneheaded policies that took our nation to the brink of financial ruin. And these tax cut proposals of the current crop of GOP presidential candidates just show us how true that really is. And it's really, really amazing to see that. And I watched on TiVo the Saturday night debate that was anchored by George Stephanopoulos, Diane Sawyer, and a guy from New Hampshire. And they spent so much time focusing on trivial issues and trying to get Rick Santorum to say something really stupid about contraception. And I agree that Santorum is out there on contraception, but that's not the defining issue of the moment or of this campaign. And it's just infuriating to see the network spend time on those issues and never challenge the fundamental premise of Republicanism today, of Tea Party economics. They just blithely accept that a government with declining revenues has to cut services to the poor and to the most vulnerable while we pump up defense and spy spending. It's insane, and you can tell. It gets me a little worked up. In Iran, on Monday, a court has sentenced an American Marine of Iranian descent to death. Is Amir Mirzai Hekmati, age 28, an American spy? Well, according to the Iranians, he entered Iran after serving at U.S. bases in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the intelligence ministry in Iran, and we can take all this at face value, whether you believe them or not, but they say that he was last seen at the Bagram airfield in Afghanistan, and they tracked him as he infiltrated Iran. Now, this is the latest face-off between the U.S. and Iran. We know that over this past summer, non-Iranian provocateurs, they could have been American, they could have been Israeli, they might have been hired guns, but they attempted to kill two of Iran's top nuclear scientists, and they were successful in one case and not in the other. Add to this the totally bogus plot that the U.S. alleged last July about the guy in Texas. I've told you this story before, but he's an Iranian-American used car salesman who is not qualified to be a spy. And we are led to believe by our government, without any real evidence, that this guy was concocting a plot in alignment with a Mexican drug cartel to assassinate the Saudi ambassador to Washington, D.C. And so, despite the White House and State Department denials and CIA denials about Hekmati, well, I don't believe those denials. And if they can prove that he's not a spy, given his military background and his service in the U.S. Army, then actually in the Marine Corps, pardon me, I just have to say it's an open question. And he is now a pawn in this superpower struggle against a regional leader in Iran. And, of course, the backdrop is the enhanced uranium enrichment. They're up to 20%. They got to get to 90% to make a bomb. And they've moved their enrichment underground in a facility near the holy city of Qom, Q-O-M, in Iran. So this is going to be a continuing issue. And what is really important is the way the media is playing this. And the same people who brought us the incredible blunder called the invasion of Iraq in 2003 are now blindly offering some of the same bullshit arguments for an attack on Iran. And Max Boot from the Center for Foreign Relations is one of the guys who cheerleaded the Bush-Cheney team and the rest of our country into Iraq, and they're trying to do it again just by changing the Q to an N. And recently, Max Boot climbed on to support an article written by a fellow scholar, in quotes, at the Center for Foreign Relations, called Time to Attack Iran, Why a Strike is the Least Bad Option. And Max Boot wrote an article in which he concluded, I have yet to see, have I missed it, an equally detailed and convincing exposition of the anti-bombing side. Well, Max Boot, you don't listen to the Peter B. Collins podcast, do you? And it's not just me. There are plenty of people who object to the idea of risking a military exchange with Iran because not only could it harm Israel and other nations in the Middle East, but it really could cause real problems for the United States. And we can't afford to open up another military front at this time. And over at the organization FAIR, the liberal group Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, they have been coordinating contacts between their supporters and the public editor, Arthur Brisbane, at the New York Times, regarding the Times' skewed coverage, which is pushing us toward a war with Iran. And I give credit to FAIR. They're a good group, and they have really got the right angle on this story here. In a Times blog post on the 10th of January, which is today, Brisbane agrees that the paper is incorrect in referring to a recent assessment by the International Atomic Energy Agency that Iran's nuclear program has a military objective. Brisbane writes, "I think the readers are correct on this. The Times hasn't corrected the story, but it should, because this is a case of when a shorthand phrase doesn't do justice to a nuanced set of facts. In this case, the distinction between the two is important because the Iranian program has emerged as a possible cause of war, casus belli," he writes in Latin. And Brisbane also wrote, "Some readers, mindful of the faulty intelligence and reporting about Saddam Hussein's weapons program, are watching the Iran nuclear coverage very closely. And I hope you're one of those." In Iraq, more violence as the civil war deferred by the American occupation is shaping up. It will continue to be ugly. In Afghanistan, for the third time in less than 2 weeks, an Afghan soldier turned his gun on an American soldier while they were playing volleyball, killing one and wounding three others before he was fatally shot. And these are the forces that Leon Panetta and David Petraeus tell us are ready to take over. Yeah. Yeah. We're going to Afghanize that war, aren't we? Well, it's been so successful in Iraq, we've got to apply it in Afghanistan as well. Here in the United States, a curious report that doesn't match my own experience. We have a report, I'll tell you where it came from in a moment, but this is an Associated Press article that says U.S. healthcare spending grew in 2010 by a mere 3.9%, reaching $2.6 trillion, about $8,400 per person. And the AP says the increases for 2010 and 2009 were the lowest measured in 51 years. Now, that's the cost of health care. How does that explain the health insurance hikes that we saw in the past year of 15 to 30% and sometimes more than 50%? This does not square. And the so-called Obamacare or the health reform law that is inching into effect and really doesn't take full effect until 2014, may have some intangible and indirect impact in slowing the cost increases of healthcare itself. But this suggests to me huge profit-taking in the healthcare industry, and that was what Obamacare doesn't address. It doesn't control costs, and it doesn't control profit-taking. And as long as those factors remain, I'm dubious that we will dig ourselves out of the fact that we have 50 million people uninsured. And one of the things that's described in this AP report is that the slowdown is mostly due to postponement of care due to anticipated inability to pay. You know what that means? I'm not going to the doctor because it's going to cost money that I don't have. We need single payer. We need Medicare for all. And once we have Medicare for all, when we're all in the same boat, we'll make sure that boat doesn't sink. That, to me, is the only way out of this healthcare mess. Here in California, we have seen a couple of recent reversals of death penalty cases that I find unusual. The state Supreme Court on Monday issued its second reversal of a death penalty in the last 2 months after upholding 46 consecutive death sentence appeals. And I won't go into the specifics of the case. The individual was basically, they took out the death penalty, but upheld his conviction on other aspects of the crime he is accused of committing. But Bob Agelko, who writes for the San Francisco Chronicle and is their legal affairs writer, also talks about the U.S. Supreme Court refusing to reinstate two murder convictions of a Los Angeles man leaving intact a ruling that said prosecutors relied on a jailhouse informant who was a habitual liar. And this is against the backdrop of a growing effort here in California to qualify a ballot measure for this fall that the framers say will replace the death penalty. Essentially, it will repeal it and replace it with life without parole. And they're very careful to talk about replacing it, not just repealing it, and that's very smart political language. Also here in California, on the heels of the gas explosion in San Bruno, a San Francisco suburb a year and a half ago, State Assembly member Jerry Hill has introduced three bills to try to strengthen the work of the Public Utilities Commission, which basically is just a lapdog for the utilities that they are supposed to be regulating. The most important is AB 1546, and essentially, he would say that if companies blow up communities, their profits will be affected. Now, I'm paraphrasing badly here, but that's the gist of the bill, that it would tie safety performance to the gas rates that companies can charge their customers. And this comes out of the San Bruno explosion because PG&E is trying to charge the ratepayers and not the shareholders for the deferred improvements and inspection of gas pipelines that should have been happening all along. And this is the history of PG&E. I've been in California since 1976, and ever since they built the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant, they have been looking for ways to soak the ratepayers for expenses that clearly should be borne by the shareholders. Jerry Hill, I hope you'll continue to fight. He has introduced similar bills in the past and not been able to get them out of committee because the power, the incredible power, lobbying power, that PG&E has in Sacramento. And finally today, Randall Terry is back. And I miss this, but Randall Terry, the anti-abortion activist, the guy who has spent a year in jail, been arrested 50 times for breaking the law to try to make his statements, he has somehow become a candidate for president in the Democratic primaries. And he is using a loophole in the law, one that I'm aware of, that permits candidates in federal elections to run commercials at low rates when it's close to an election date. It's called the political window. And if you're 45 days or closer to a primary, you can get much lower rates for television advertising. So Randall Terry is a, air quotes, qualified candidate for president. He wants to run some ads during the Super Bowl with grisly pictures of bloody fetuses to drive home his point that he wants to end abortion rights entirely in this country. Now, on the one hand, I am driven to respect Randall Terry's First Amendment rights. And I don't think that the television stations can or should refuse these ads. But what really galls me is that when MoveOn.org and other peace groups wanted to run Super Bowl commercials opposing the war in Iraq, opposing the occupation in Afghanistan, the networks have always said no. But because Randall Terry is a, air quotes, qualified candidate for president, the networks cannot exercise that kind of discretion. And since they can't exercise it here, they should not have limited the free speech rights, particularly of peace groups. And that's the way things are. Thanks for joining me for today's news and comment. We're still working on the upgrades to the website at peterbcollins.com. So I beg for your patience as we work through some software glitches. We're making progress, and we may have it under control very soon. But in the meantime, just stay tuned here, and we will keep you posted. Thanks for listening, and send me an email, peter at peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.